So we'll kind of have a core of people, and then we always seem to have a bunch of randos that will just scrape up at the last minute.
Diz Runs Radio, episode 470, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, today's episode is sponsored by the good folks from WeGrind.com. That's WeGrind.com. And they make some really great, really comfortable performance wear, athletic wear, you know, tech t-shirts, tank tops for the ladies, racer back tank tops for the ladies, and t-shirts, men's and women's. And rumor has it, there's a sleeveless shirt coming down the pipeline for the fellas as well. So if you're looking for a reasonably cost, reasonably priced, high quality, shirts for working out in, for running in, for whatever the case might be, I definitely can't recommend WeGrind enough. Again, WeGrind.com. Use the code DizRuns to check out, save 15%, and we'll talk a little bit more about them later in the episode. But for now, let's go ahead and get this thing started, shall we? Hey guys, a lot of folks in the running community got into the sport for one of the reasons being that they thought that our sport was kind of on the cheap side. From the outside looking in, all you really need is a pair of shoes, some shorts, a t-shirt, you know, for the ladies, and maybe a sports bra, and that's pretty much it. And then once we get into the sport, we realize that running can kind of be a money pit black hole if we're not careful. My guest today is kind of out to change that mindset when it comes to the quote-unquote perceived need of buying all the things related to running. Today's guest is an Ironman, Boston Marathon qualifier, former Division I swimmer, and a bike commuter, so clearly he takes his fitness seriously. He's also a bit frugal, and as we are certainly about to discuss, he takes his finances seriously as well. So I'm looking forward to going to learn a few things and going a few easy miles today with my friend, the Cheap Athlete. So thanks for joining us, CA, and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Danny. I'm very excited. I know you've done a whole bunch of podcasts. This is my very first one I've ever done, so I'm honored to be part of this. I'm also incredibly terrified, so be nice to me.
I'll treat you with a kid glove, my friend. Guys, obviously, Cheap Athlete, not his real name, but he's asked to kind of remain anonymous for some very legitimate reasons. So we're going to obviously respect that tonight. So we'll be just referring to him as CA for the initials for Cheap Athlete. And if you want to check out his website, he's got a whole blog and a whole host of great articles to check out for ways to save some money and maybe keep a few extra pennies in your bank account. Head over to just cheapathlete.com is the website. And Cheap Athlete is the handle on all things social media as well. And we'll have all of his information and resources and links and all that good stuff in the show notes for today's episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/470. So, CA, the way we always start off the show is with a very simple and straightforward question that sometimes has a simple and straightforward answer, and sometimes it's not so much. It kind of opens the wormhole for us and gives us all kinds of places to go. But it's just a simple question, and that is to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
I know you typically answer that, and I don't have a specific distance I prefer. I do prefer a type of race, and those are, I think most people might be familiar with the Ragnar series, but my favorite race in the whole world is the Blue Ridge Relay. I've done kind of the gamut of runs, from 5K up to, done a couple marathons, and then in the triathlon space, I've done a sprint triathlon all the way up to an Ironman. And I find that every year, the race I look forward to the most is the Blue Ridge Relay. It kind of caps off my season every year. It's in December. And for those just kind of not familiar with it, it's one of those like 208-mile relays that are broken up into 36 legs. And you, a bunch of your idiot friends, drive around in a smelly van for about 29 hours and take turns handing off a sweaty slap bracelet and running up just ridiculously hard mountain legs. Why that's my favorite is because it doesn't allow you to take yourself too seriously. And, it's kind of, part of my overall philosophy. If you ever visit my blog and kind of read some things, and, there's you know, taking yourself too seriously and focusing too much on time really doesn't allow you to focus on the bigger picture, right? But then if you go ahead and do a leg, like for instance, leg 31 of the BRR, we call the goat because the difficulty level is mountain goat hard. And it's 1.5 miles of flat, and then it's 5 miles of just straight up freaking mountain at like 5% grade of switchbacks, you know, and you kind of finish the top of it. It's like you're summiting like Alpe d'Huez, right? The people cheering for you and slapping you on the back. And it's just accomplishing it without walking, right? It's kind of nice, right? It's kind of refreshing to just not care because you don't really have a best time for like a 4.2 mile straight downhill run or something. So I like to that aspect of it. I also, you know, having been a swimmer for so much of my life, kind of really missed being part of a team and the trials and tribulations that might come with that. You know, people get hurt or injured or sick and you got to constantly, you know, adjust the plan to get to the finish line. So those are my favorite. I look forward to it every year. I've been doing it for about 7 years now. That was kind of the tipping point for my, you know, my whole running obsession and triathlon obsession. So, you know, it's kind of always special to me.
Gotcha. I've never done one of those races, but everybody who has seems to really rave about them. And it's certainly on my list of things to do at some point is to do some Ragnar, whether it's a trail, whether it's a road, maybe something like this. I know there's other organizations that do similar type of events. So they sound like they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I've done, I think, the Blue Ridge 6 times, and then I did Ragnar Wasatch Back out in Utah once, which was the hardest climb I've ever done my whole life out in Wasatch Back. You know, not to poo-poo one versus the other, you know, only about 198 teams showed up this year for like Blue Ridge Relay, so it's a little bit more grassroots, and it's kind of just has a cooler feel. Sometimes you're just out there in the mountains by yourself, just running on the Blue Ridge Parkway. So it's a little bit less crowded. It's just a community of running junkies just coming together and just running to Asheville and then just, you know, enjoying Asheville and all its fine breweries they have to offer once you get there.
What's the formation for your team? Is it a bunch of, I mean, is it the same group of guys, men and women? I don't know how it's made up, but is it the same group every year or do you tend to kind of pick up some new folks every year with a few familiar faces or how does that play itself out?
Yeah, we have a kind of a core, myself, my brother-in-law and the captain. And one thing that's great about the team is we're kind of all various levels, you know, like I tend to be the fastest person on the team, but then we might have people all the way up to like, you know, 9 or 10 minute half marathon pace because we really just don't care about so much of the time as we just care about the completion and having a good time. So we will kind of have a core of people and then we always seem to have a bunch of randos that will just scrape up at the last minute, right? Like this year, like my brother-in-law got hurt and then his wife was supposed to do it and 2 weeks before she dropped out. I was lucky enough to convince my wife to do it this year with me and she did not divorce me after, which, you know, was a significant concern. Yes. So, you know, we actually have a grid of all the people over the years that have done it with us, and you see a lot of one-hit wonders. But, you know, this year we were actually only able to scrape up 7 people total. So I think I ran about a total of 42 miles in that one day, and you know, I climbed about 4,800 feet, which tend to be a little bit more than we generally do. We try to roll with 9 people, and everybody do about 4 legs. But, you know, this year we kind of had to all step up a little bit, which made it more entertaining, which also meant we didn't sleep at all.
Right.
And we were very dirty, but you know, it was a fantastic time.
Gotcha. For myself and also for obviously for those that haven't done one of these type of races before, how hard is it to get out of the van after an hour, 2 hours, however long it is between your legs and start going again? I mean, to me, sounds like it would not be the most enjoyable thing, but what's it like? What's it been like in your experience?
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, when you run with 9 people, right, you might have like 5 hours between and it's just a lot of downtime of cramping and you'll find yourself like limping up to the start. Like, right, I just climbed a mountain a couple hours ago. Like, what am I going to do? And then the moment your person comes in, you slap on the bracelet, that shot of adrenaline hits and then you're running again. And as soon as you finish, you're back to limping. So it's actually kind of interesting. Somebody always kind of bring a foam roller and people trying to stay loose throughout. This year was more interesting because of a 7-person lineup, and I just threw people around. So, you know, there was a husband and wife group on our team, and they pretty much ran throughout the night. Like, he handed off to her, then she back to him, which was kind of an extra element. But it is just weird. Like, you can't walk, but then all of a sudden, you know, you're running up a mountain just fine.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's you know, to me, it's those things like that that you don't – you kind of think about when somebody's like, hey, you want to do this team relay thing with us? And you're like, yeah, that sounds like fun. And then when it actually, to me, in my mind, again, if I ever got to that point, when you get there, it'd be like, oh crap, like how, here's a whole new variable that I had never thought of before. And it just, you know, obviously everybody's different. Everybody's body responds differently. So some probably have an easier time with it than others.
Yeah, and over the very first year, I remember I did it with my two brother-in-laws, and we got to Asheville, and we all went to bed at like 6 o'clock in the afternoon, and we couldn't walk the next day. Throughout the years, you've gotten better, right? I mean, I kind of use it as a training trip at this point. You know, I go down there and just run up a bunch of mountains and get stronger, and, you know, it's made me a way better runner as a result, just, you know, just going up and running uphill. Those kind of hills don't really exist up here in New Jersey, so it's kind of nice to have that extra elevation aspect.
And down here in Florida, the hills are basically non-existent. So we're searching out highway overpasses, so you get hill repeats on, and it's just not quite the same. So yeah, I would imagine it would definitely improve your running. You do it every year.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's I've seen the results. It's been it's been kind of a cool progression.
Awesome. So, the most obvious topic, well, let's get into it. Like we said, the handle, the website, everything points to Cheap Athlete. So, there's a lot of things that probably we could unpack from this, and we'll kind of see where it goes. We'll take it and go with it as the conversation leads. But it doesn't take long for anybody that goes to the website to look through that. At least the impression that I get is that it's Being money conscious, being wise with your money, saving and not spending on things that aren't necessary, it seems like that branches out beyond just the sporting realm, beyond just the triathlon and the running and things like that. That's kind of a way of life for you. And if that's true, where did that mindset that I don't know if passion is the right word, or that willingness to pinch your pennies and be careful with your money, where did that start and come from for you?
Yeah, and this might be a long, rambling answer, so feel free to kick me back on track. It was probably a combination of a bunch of things. And, you know, I actually do think getting into running originally kind of was the seeds of my whole kind of quest for financial independence. And that was basically because I just realized, you know, I was more interested in seeking experiences and stuff. And after a while, when you do start finding things you want to do with your life, what makes you happy, and if it is experiences and not just consuming stuff or just, you know, going out and buying a sweater that you're probably never going to use or something like that, you start realizing the ultimate luxury in life is your time. So if you start looking at your opportunity cost, and sorry to bring that up, I have an economics degree, so I kind of always talk like one. But, you know, if you start looking at your opportunity costs, like what is this worth to my financial future or my time or what else I could be doing with it, you start realizing a lot of this stuff is kind of unnecessary. But I think, so all my life I've always kind of been pretty frugal. I think what kind of jump-started it, my sister-in-law retired early at 44, which is a very non-standard age of retirement. And she did it about a year after, you know, her father had passed. And you start to appreciate life when you have kind of like a family tragedy like that. So, you know, I was curious. I'm like, you know, how do you manage to do that? So she pointed me to a website, which anybody in the FIRE community, FIRE stands for Financial Independence Retire Early, has heard of Mr. Money Mustache. And for anybody who has not been to that website, they should visit it for a financial punch in the face. He essentially is a dude that retired at 30, lives a very simple life. And kind of, you know, is very against some of the general consumerist practices we have. And that was really just, it stuck with me. He's really in cycling. He's cheap. And it just kind of really hit me. So, you know, that kind of combined with, you know, me finding like a passion for running and cycling and just kind of experiencing life really just came to a head. And I was like, you know what, I'd rather just not have cable or I'd rather bring my lunch every day to work. So, maybe something in the future I can take 10 or 15 years off the tail end of my career and just, you know, enjoy this planet while I'm here.
Right. And I think, I mean, personally, like I'm a big fan of a lot of those things as well. I mean, we cut the cord and obviously we have some internet and things like that, but you know, there's no, you know, $100-something cable bill every month anymore. And certainly prefer to, for me, my wife, sometimes we have a little disagreement on this sometimes, but I would prefer to eat at home all the time as opposed to go to restaurants. I mean, the food's better, it's healthier and certainly cheaper. But I don't know if but is quite the right conjunction I'm looking for, but I mean, you know, I do some of these things so that I'll, you know, have a little bit of extra money to play with, maybe to run an extra race, to get, you know, something running related or something fun, you know, that maybe is some experiences as well, but it also is kind of borderline on or not borderline, it is stuff as well. Mm-hmm. Where in the running and triathlon, the athletic side of it, have you really, or what kind of things did, you know, I don't know exactly what the best, I'm asking this, but, you know, where do you choose to spend versus save? And this, I know this is a broad topic, so let's kind of jump in and we'll pick around and hop around and cover some different things, mm-hmm. but, spending versus saving when it comes to the running and that side of your life, the running triathlete, the athletic side.
Yeah. So the spending is mainly going to come, on like the cycling side. You know, I do not have a bike that I purchased at Walmart. You know, somewhat snobby in that, you know, I bought a pretty good bike. probably unnecessarily bought, you know, I bought a triathlon bike, which, you know, I have an article on there about whether or not you really need it or not. Even probably the worst purchase I ever made, but I own it and I'm holding on to it, is I bought some, you know, carbon wheels. You know, I'm in the middle of a post that's probably starting to become a dissertation at this point. I can't seem to finish it. I'm sure you know what that feels like. But on about buying speed in general, and it looks like, you know, buying some carbon rims really only saves you like 2 minutes over the duration of an Ironman, which is just an absurd cost to price ratio or cost to benefit ratio. But, you know, I do have, you know, I have a Cannondale, which I was able to buy kind of half price through a connection from my old swimming career. But, you know, it was still like $1,500, $1,700 for that bike, which is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I ride the heck out of it. It brings me a lot of joy, and I don't really think I'll ever have to replace it. Very first bike when I got into it was not that bike. I bought a bike for $300 off Craigslist. I rode it for 3 years. I sold it back to somebody else for $300. So I essentially got it free
right
for like 3 years. And then at that point, I realized, all right, you know what? I'm into this sport. I dig it. I'll go spend a few bucks on it. But, you know, people can go really crazy. And if you've ever been to a triathlon, you know what I'm talking about. You see people on these like $13,000 spaceships, just like going crazy, right? And then you might finish the bike leg, and then the guy starts to walk, right? And then you just like pass him on the run, because there's so much emphasis on that. But, you know, I do have a somewhat nice bike. And I find that my bike gear tends to be more expensive, but that's probably because there's no TJ Maxx equivalent for cycling. you know, all my running stuff, my clothes are probably coming from Target and Old Navy. You know, I have like $1 hat I wear in the winter, $1 headband. You know, I've had this one, I wrote about it, I had this one tank top I bought for $6 at Target that I still wear 6 years later. You know, I'm not down with, you know, that Lululemon $50 shirt. If you kind of think about, like, you can buy a $5 shirt or a $50 shirt. And the only way that economically makes sense is if that shirt would then last 10 times as long as the other shirt. And, you know, I've had this one shirt for 5 years. I do not think that Lululemon shirt's lasting me 50 years.
Probably not.
So I do skimp there, especially as it comes to running gear. And then, you know, I do have an article called Getting the Funk Out Your Workout Junk. And, you know, as your clothes tend to get a little, you know, a little sour, I just find just throwing a little bit of vinegar in the in the washing bin or the laundry machine does a pretty admirable job of getting it out. So I don't really buy into a lot of that anti-stink technology that people are trying to get you to pay for. Mm-hmm. And then where I actually do spend a decent amount of money is I don't do a lot of races. You know, I tend to do maybe like 3 or 4 a year, but I like to race in cool places. This goes back to my, like, I like to seek experiences. So, you know, I did Ironman in Mont-Tremblant, Quebec. You know, this year I did a half Ironman in Boulder. You know, I raced the Charleston Marathon. I like to go to North Carolina. My wife has gone to Tahoe for a half marathon. So we tend to like to couple it in with vacations. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, I've obviously been able to, you know, kind of finagle a cheap way of doing that. And, you know, it's a concept very familiar in the FIRE community, but that's through travel hacking. And you might be familiar with this a bit, but that's maximizing credit card rewards to travel the world for free. So like last year I traveled to North Carolina, to South Carolina and to Colorado. And next year I've already gotten my hotel for the Boston Marathon. I booked them all with points. So all I paid was maybe like $22 for my trip to Boulder in terms of flying. And I essentially just open up a new credit card every couple months. You know, you do the minimum spend required. They'll give you 60,000 points, and then you book that to book your flight to Boulder. And then, you know, then you've saved like $600 to $800 on your trip. And that's really important for like people getting into triathlon for the first time, right? If you're going to go out and buy like $1,000 bike, you might as well open up a new credit card and get a 50,000 miles. So then you can at least travel to a cool race for free, you know, on Cannondale or whatever you know, you just bought. You know, and I think a popular misconception, because some people might just think I'm ruining my credit score by doing that. You know, my credit score is about 819, and I open one up every like 3 months.
So you're doing all right there.
Yeah, yeah, and it, because what I don't think people really understand is, like, yeah, you have a ding when you open up the credit card, right? So say they take it down 2 points, but the amount of outstanding credit you have, if your utilization ratio is low, it kind of has a net effect of zero. So, like, you know, I'm pretty frugal dude, so maybe my credit card bills are like $1,000, $2,000, but if I have 10 credit cards open and I have $100,000 of, like, outstanding credit, my ratio is, like, 1 or 2% versus you, if you have one credit card with $5,000 limit and you carry 2,000, you're at like, you know, like 40%. So it actually negatively affects your score. So that's kind of been big for me to kind of, you know, this sport is definitely a yuppie sport, especially when you look at triathlon. But you know, you don't need to spend all your money doing it. There are ways you can, you know, figure it out, and at least by getting free flights and like hotels, right? I'm like, not, I think the hotel at the Boston Marathon right now is like $300 a night for the, for the high end. I got two nights for free, and that was on, I think, Chase.
Can't argue with that.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the big, like macro idea in terms of how, like, I try to keep the race things, you know, cheap. And then, you know, some of the really areas I skimp, I think my most popular post on here is making my own body glide, which is an incredibly cheap thing to do. I know it is. But and I actually did find a recipe online. I do need to link to her website so she doesn't accuse me of
stealing
her stuff. Right. Yeah. I know bloggers are very against that. And, you know, that was one of my earlier posts before I kind of learned about this. But, you know, I think body glide, if you go to the store, like, it's like $13 or something for like a stick, right? And it's like 2.5 ounces. And if you think about where you're putting that stick, right, you're putting it on your feet, your private bits, your butt, your armpit, all the grossest plates on your body. And I have a hard time just spending like that much money. And every time I would run out the stick, I'm like, ah, crap. Like, this is ridiculous. So I tried other brands, and then I just kind of found online, you can make kind of your own. So like, it's just equal parts, beeswax, coconut oil, and shea butter. And you kind of melt it in like a double boiler. And then it comes down to like $1 a stick once you like let it dry or whatever. And, you know, maybe it's not quite as good as body glide, but, you know, it's not, I'm not willing to pay 13 times more for it.
Right.
So that's one of the more incredibly cheap things I do. You know, it's somewhat embarrassing, but it's somewhat kind of cool. People have seemed interested in it.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I want to talk a little bit more about a few of those, a couple of things kind of along the lines that you'd brought up there. But first, just want to take a second and pay a couple bills. And I was telling CA before we started recording tonight that it was a little awkward to try to figure out to do a sponsor in here with the conversation for tonight. But I think we got a good one. It's a good product. I've used it, and the cost is all right. I mean, it's maybe not the TJ Maxx price, but it's certainly not the Saks Fifth Avenue price either. And that's for WeGrind, the tech shirts, performance shirts, tank tops, racer backs, all that kind of good stuff. Small little husband and wife company out of Arizona here in the USA. And about $25 gets you a really good dry fit shirt. Comfortable, guys, it passes the nipple test. You don't have to use your homemade body glide to cover up your nipples while you're wearing the shirt and worry about them bleeding. Like, you can just go dry nipples and you won't bleed. It's a beautiful thing. It's also antimicrobial, doesn't stink. You can wear it, you know, I put this to the test several times in a row without washing it, still no funk. So you don't need to do the vinegar in the laundry machine or you get the fancy detergent either. So, you know, maybe it's a little bit you know, more expensive up front for the shirt, but maybe you're saving a few bucks on the back end without needing a couple other things as well. But it's a great product, great shirt. Certainly recommend it. And if you use the code DIZRUNS at checkout, you can save 15% too. So you can be a little cheap, a little frugal on the checkout as well. So it's a great great little discount offered by Chris and his wife. So WeGrind.com, WEGRYND.com. Diz runs at checkout to save 15%. And again, a good quality shirt for a fair price, and it's going to last for a while. So you're getting some return on it as well. So, and see, yeah, that's kind of where I wanted to get in here to ask your or ask a couple questions on the idea of spending a little more up front for something that that lasts. So I did a quick tip episode of, I don't know, maybe it's a month or two ago, something like that, talking about some running shorts. Like I used to be, and I still do get most of my stuff from Target, from TJ Maxx. You know, like I said before we started recording, I'm mm-hmm. like you in a lot of ways. I'm willing to pinch the pennies, and you know, if something works for $5, there's no reason to spend $10 or $15 for the same type of thing. Like why not, you know, save the money? And so I'd always been the guy that was getting the Target running shorts, and I mean, without fail, they'd last a few months, maybe 6 months if I got lucky and got a really good pair before the inseams would start tearing out. And all of a sudden now you got a super chafe issue, and you know, plus if you sit down to stretch, nobody, you're seeing stuff that nobody wants to see. So you know, it was like every, you know, you get a pair of shorts for $18-$20, something like that, unless they were on sale, and then, you know, every 4, 5, 6 months you're replacing them out. And I finally took the plunge after a few people had told me, like, hey, you know, sometimes if you spend a little bit more on some really nice running shorts, like more than you would think would be realistic, like they last, and they last for years, and they really hold up. So you kind of already mentioned this a little bit, or kind of already talked about it, but I'd love to get a little bit more in depth on the idea of spending a little bit more for something that is quality, even though it is up front, and versus trying to be cheap all the time. So how do you draw that line for yourself between, all right, like I can get the cheaper option, but maybe it's a better choice to spend a couple bucks more or you know, however much more within reason to get something that's a little bit more quality that's going to last 2, 3, 4 times longer than the cheap option, so it makes more financial sense in the long run?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great question. And, you know, having studied economics, I'm always looking at the marginal benefit versus the marginal cost. And if the benefit does outweigh it, you know, I'm willing to do it. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to have the ability to go out and purchase, you know, a modestly priced bike, you know, like $1,500 if I do think it's a perceived value versus, you know, buying something at Walmart. So I do understand where I'm lucky there. You know, not all my decisions have been great. I have a little section of my blog that I've kind of starting out to called the Hall of Lame Sauce, where I just list some of my terrible purchases. Some of them, like, you know, if you do one of these overnight relay races, you need to have like a vest, like a reflective vest. So my, you know, very early on to doing this race, I went out and I bought one of those ridiculous construction vests on like eBay. It was like $2, and you know, it was a one size fits anybody. And,
so really, know, one size fits no one is what it works out to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm 5'10", like 155, 160 pounds. Right, I'm definitely on the other side of that equation. So I was running. It was like a freaking cape. You know, it was like blown in the wind, but it also at the same time managed to hold in all the heat. So as soon as I was done with that thing, I picked it up and I just threw it in the garbage. I was like, this was a really dumb purchase. Unfortunately, the next thing I bought was a more expensive Amphipod one, also a piece of garbage. It had like the built-in lights, but like the lights were centered right at your sternum where all your sweat ran. Mm. So then like your sweat just corroded the battery, and that thing lasted one season too. So I don't really have any advice when it comes to those vests. I think they all suck, but, you know, when you mentioned like shorts, and you know, I have probably a couple pairs of like Nike running shorts, and you know, if you're patient, you'll find scores at like TJ Maxx. So like they were like $15, which, you know, normally MSRP they're like $30 or $40, and you know, I've had them for a number of years. And then I think a lot of my winter running gear, you know, New Jersey gets pretty cold. You know, not as cold as probably some of your listeners in like Minnesota or something, but definitely colder than Florida.
Right.
But you know, I do, for the winter gear, I tend to spend a little bit more money on, like, the summer gear, like, I'm lucky if I'm wearing a shirt anyways, mm-hmm. right? So I don't really care if it's terribly expensive, but, you know, if I'm running out in 0 degrees, you know, I purchased a pretty nice shell jacket, like a Pearl Zumi shell jacket that's got me through about 4 winters now of training. That is a fantastic job. I think I got it on clearance at Running Warehouse after a coupon for, like, $75 or something, which mm-hmm. seems like a lot up front, but, you know, I've probably worn it like 1,000 times.
Right.
It's definitely not falling apart. And then I use it also for cycling. So mm-hmm. when I do tend to spend up for gear, I try to make sure it's stuff I can use, you know, for other activities.
Right.
So, you know, I bought, you know, like I have a pair of Nike thermal tights I wear in the winter, but I bought them in the spring for Running Warehouse. Mm-hmm. I got for like $30 instead of $110. And I've had those things for years, and I use them for cycling, and also use them when I go watch the Steelers in Pittsburgh in January when it's like 2 degrees.
Right.
And I'm sitting there in the stands freezing. So, you know, I don't mind spending up where I do think it's necessary. Some things I just do not think it's really necessary. And, you know, I don't, you know, especially when it comes to like shoes and stuff. I know you're sponsored by a few shoe companies, so I'll wash my mouth a little bit, but I tend to stay away from like some of the gimmicky stuff.
Okay, so we don't have to watch our mouth too much. I mean, it's all good. You know, I think that the shoes can go both ways. I think that you can be too cheap where you get a piece of junk that can cause you more problems than it's worth. But I definitely, you know, I'm a huge fan of, oh, so here's the new model of the shoe I really like. Well, what's, you know, last season's model is half price. And it's pretty much the same shoe. So, like, I'm all about, you know, being smart with how it comes to purchasing shoes. So, what are some of the things that you think are just ridiculous? You said a couple of things that just really, shoes being one of them, but that just people spend way too much money on for no real benefit, no real difference from you know, the cheapo model to the fancy runner specific, triathlete specific stuff that is, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first and foremost, I alluded to it earlier, like just speed wheels for a triathlon. I mean, for 2 minutes over like a 10 or 11 hour race, you're spending $1,000.
Right.
Where you can just buy a pair of speed laces for your running shoes, right? That keeps you from having to tie it for $7. Yeah. It's like a minute there, right? Or if you just practice running more, right, and you get a minute or mile faster in a half Ironman, for free, you can make yourself 13 minutes faster, right? So I think that's just a ridiculously unnecessary purchase. And if you do want to do it, you can rent them. Mm-hmm. So you can just rent it for like $50 or $100 instead of buying $1,000 things. You know, if you do 10 races out of it, that's, you know, $100 a pop or whatever, which, you know, most people aren't doing that many races, at least early on. You know, that's something you should be purchasing once you're comfortable with your level and that you're going to continue to do
it. Yeah, and you know you're going to really be competing competing hard consistently for years. Yeah, exactly.
So that's one of those things. I think people get really, really carried away with gear. I think the most common question, like a lot of my colleagues and friends, they all seem to come up to me and ask me advice. And it's like, as soon as they sign up for a race, like, all right, what stuff do I need to buy? And I'm like, I don't know, man, that's really up to you. You got to figure out what's important to you. Like, do you really need to have a bike with Dura-Ace components? Like, do you really think you need a $5,000 bike and you've never biked your entire life?
Right.
Maybe you should start small and figure out if you dig it, you know, buy a used bike or something. So I think in the biking space, it's just ridiculous. You see some wacky things show up at races with like these aerodynamic water bottles and these crazy alien looking helmets. And people focus so much on buying speed, but then a lot of times they don't do the necessary practice and training that should come along with having that level of gear. So you see a little bit less of it in the running space, although, you know, people always tend to point to their shoes as the cause of and the solution of all of their problems. Right. I, to this day, will not wear like a pair, and apologies to them, but like those Newtons with those weird bumps on the bottom. I'm not a huge fan. You know, I think we were all kind of, you know, we all have our own physical limitations, and I think your body tries to run a certain way, right? And you can tweak it here and there, which is important for injury and stuff. But I don't like the idea of almost kind of forcing you into something that your body wasn't designed to do. I think you might fix one problem by causing others. You know, I pulled my calf running some Maximalist shoes. I found those Brooks ones on clearance and, you know, didn't like that. So I tend to be very neutral when it comes to like shoes. I'm kind of brand agnostic, although I tend to always end up in Brooks, Mizuno's or Sacconi's. But like you, I wait until the models are going out. You know, they adjusted a shoelace hole in the new model, so now that's worth $130, and the old ones are only worth $65. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't give me any money, but Running Warehouse, they've had a coupon code that's been working for 7 years. FB15D on any clearance items, you get an additional 15% off, which is just crazy.
Wow.
I think I'm running in a pair of Mizuno Wave Riders right now that I bought for $50, and you know, the current model is like $130. So, you know, I've sent a lot of business to them. I'd love some kickbacks from them if they're listening. I've sent you a lot of business over these years. But you know, I try to like not overthink it when it comes to that. I do believe in buying like a good running brand. You know, Mizuno, Brooks, and Saucony are all runner brands. Like, I'm not going to Target and buying the C9 shoes.
Right.
Although I might buy their shirts or potentially their shorts or like a headband or a pair of gloves. I think I do have an article on socks. I just don't understand the market for socks. Like, I've been wearing these Puma running socks I bought at Costco for $9 for a six pack. I think it comes out to like $1.70 a pair. But if you go to like a runner store and they try to sell you these $15 socks, like, I don't get why you would spend that. If somebody can explain that to me, maybe I'm missing out on something. But you know, I don't really get a lot of blisters, and if, you know, maybe at a relay race when I'm running like 50 miles in a day or something, but I just put Body Glide on my feet and then that's kind of the end of it.
Right.
So that to me is just a ridiculous face. I don't get that market, but kudos to people that, you know, are able to earn a living selling them. I don't know if I could, I can't figure out that need.
that was one of the things I was, if you didn't bring it up, I was going to ask, cause I saw that article and I was laughing. It was, and you know, to play somewhat devil's advocate, like I know you had a picture in there with some other more expensive socks that you'd gotten in like a goodie bag or, you know, a sample set or, you know, somewhere along the line, you picked up a couple of, you know, quote unquote, higher quality, running socks. And I've done the same thing where I've gotten a few of them here and there that I don't think I've ever really paid for any running socks, but I have several pairs of them and I feel like I like them better. But I still haven't gotten to the point where I've ponied up the $10 or $12 per pair of socks, as opposed to, you know, like when they start to wear out, then like I kind of do the same thing, get the cheapo, you know, the six pack from somewhere and roll with it. So, I can't give you a good explanation for it either. Although I do think I like them better, but I mean, the cost is kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, I think, you know, and apologies to all these companies. I don't think they're doing anything wrong. I'm just, you know, I'm an economist, but you know, I got the features at Tobacco Road Marathon. They're fantastic socks. I really like them, but I'm probably not going to pay for them. But if you're going to give them to me for free, I'm going to wear them. They're probably going to be my favorite socks. Mm-hmm. You know, the Smartwool ones I got as a gift, and they're good, obviously, as you get in the winter. You know, when it does come the winter, I did buy a pair of they're called Drymax socks. You know, they're all over Running Warehouse, but they're just like a freaking oven mitt over your foot. You know, they're really big. You know, I run it through the winter in the same shoes, and then I just wear these Drymax socks. And I think they're like $15, but you know, I've had them for years, and those are for like the 0 degree days I'm trying to run. But other than that, it's those Puma socks I've been buying at TJ Maxx and Costco all these years.
And they're working just fine for you.
Yeah, I got no beef with them. Maybe I'm missing out on some. Maybe I could be faster if I went out and spent $20 on a pair of socks and. I doubt it. And then in the cycling community, I don't know if you're aware, but, you know, people dictate that you're supposed to wear these like quarter shin socks that like match all your crap. And I just don't get that at all either. I use the same ones. Like, they don't really make you any faster. I do know there's some speed socks out there that can save you like a nanosecond in a time trial if you're, you know, a highly elite athlete. But I'm not doing a time trial and I'm not a highly elite athlete, so it doesn't really matter to me.
Right. And, you know, like you said on the website and you mentioned earlier, maybe just go out and run an extra hill repeat a couple times a month and, you know, makes up the difference and saves you $10 a pair of socks or something like that.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, it's, you know, kind of the philosophy all really boils down to is like, why are you doing this, right? Like, generally, you're supposed to be doing this because it's fun. Like, most of us are not professionals. You know, some of us get sponsorships here and there, but for the most part, we're all professionals with something else, and this is supposed to be a hobby. So you really shouldn't like over-engineer it. Like, you know, when I was a swimmer, at the end of the year when we go to a conference meet, we'd shave our legs and have expensive stuff because it was important, really important to us. You know, we were on scholarship and whatnot. But like, it's like, you know, is it worth all this money to get up like to get 105th place instead of 110th when I could just go out there and run because that's what I want to do. You know, it's what I'm electing to do with my free time. So it's. It's all kind of about perspective as well.
Mm-hmm. And for you, clearly, I don't know if clearly is the right word, but your goals are especially your financial goals, much bigger than it relates to running. But one thing you said there that really just kind of jumped out at me is, you know, this is a hobby. But for some people, like, they don't mind investing in their hobbies. You know, you think about golfers, how much money they spend a year on, you know, greens fees and different clubs and lessons and the whole nine yards. And you know, that's their hobby. That's something they enjoy doing and they're fine spending the money with it. you know, for you, maybe it's not as important, but what's, you know, when somebody pushes back to you and says, you know what, this is what, something I really like to do. And this is something I enjoy doing. I enjoy, you know, going on a bunch of trips with my friends to go run destination races, or I enjoy having, you know, the fanciest this, that, or the other, the matching socks that go with my shorts that go with whatever, you know, but that's something they enjoy doing. They have the money to spend on it. Do you offer much of a pushback, or you just say, "Hey, that's your prerogative. That's cool. This is my prerogative, and this is where we're just different, but we can still do the same thing. You know, we still do the same sport."
Yeah, no, and I, you know, the one thing I like so much about, especially when it comes to running, is, you know, it is a community, and everybody kind of has a similar, you know, passion and hobby, and they all enjoy it, and everyone's very accepting. Just as much as I don't like when somebody preaches to me why I need to go buy a bike with Dura-Ace components when, you know, I can ride something with much lower end and just be just as fast. Mm-hmm. I don't like, you know, gear snobs, but you don't love like anti-gear snobs as much as well, right? The people just make you feel like crap, right? Like, right. At the end of the day, like, it's about what makes you happy, right? So if buying that bike makes you happy and, you know, you can look at it and be like, I have no regrets purchasing that's awesome, right? I have regrets spending $14 for a body glide that I'm gonna rub all over my feet, right? So I'm like, if I know I want to go to Boulder for a race, right, and I want to go race on my expensive triathlon bike, you know, it's easier to fund those kind of things without really jeopardizing your future by, you know, finding places where you can keep it. But, you know, it's at the end of the day, we're all put on this earth and we have only a set amount of time, and, you know, I'm not here to tell anybody how they should or should not lead it. It's about what makes you happy. I just find that a lot of people, you know, this goes outside of the sport, you know, unnecessarily consume stuff that actually keeps them from achieving some kind of happiness because they're, you know, always, you know, attached to having a job or having to work and really not able to go out and experience some of the things they'd like to do. And that's kind of, for me, why I, you know, elect to pinch some things here and there, because I have a bigger goal in mind of just kind of being able to do this, you know, sleep until 10 instead of having to wake up at 4:45 to run. You know, people actually run at a normal hour like a normal person because I have more freedom. So, you know, it's just about, you know, where you put your priorities. But, you know, not with your bad self. If you want to buy an expensive bike, that's cool. I mean, they're still amazing investments in the long run. I mean,
right.
My commuter bike saves me about $2,700 a year in parking. Mm-hmm. So if I think about that, I wrote an article called "The Best Investment I'll Ever Make." I spent $600 for this little folding bike. It saves me $225 a month in parking. So that's a 40% annualized return. So even if I went out and bought a $3,000 commuter bike, it pays for itself in 1 year.
Right.
So ultimately, a lot of these things, you know, in the grand picture, they're still, you know, getting a running habit is probably still cheaper than getting into like a BMW habit,
right,
or, you know, drug habit or some other expensive things. I mean, it's still somewhat frugal. And I do think when you get into these kind of sports, you know, you tend to place value on the experiences. I still think they do have, you know, you ultimately don't end up like consuming too much in the long run, but mm-hmm. I think you can just do better if you want.
Yeah. And you know, and when, right there, when you were saying at the end, you know, better than the BMW habit and some of the other things, like, you know, the health savings too. I mean, you know, if you're going to maximize it out, if you, you know, being healthier is, especially as you get older, is a whole lot cheaper than being unhealthy. So, you know, there's that savings too, that kind of comes into play on the back end.
Yeah. And I just find the sport in general, for me, like, I was a lot more negative a person before I got into it. And you know, happiness really kind of, you know, leads to further happiness. And then you just kind of, things kind of fall into place after that too. So, you know, if spending on some of these things, cause it allows you to be happy and have a passion and seek things, it still probably pays off, even if not financially, just like emotionally and physically in the long run too. So you can't ignore that.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. So, one thing that, I think maybe this would be kind of the last big topic for tonight. We'll see, who knows how things always wind up. But, I mentioned in the intro that you're a Boston Marathon qualifier, and I was going to kind of maybe try to wonder if maybe, you know, because of, I mean, that's an expensive race, if maybe, you know, you're a qualifier, but you weren't going to run it because of the cost. But then you said earlier that you already booked the hotel for the marathon. So, I take that to mean you're running the marathon next year. You know, everybody who listens to the show regularly knows that that's my big goal race, something I really want to do, want to experience everything, you know, the whole weekend, everything about running that, you know, historic race. What are you most looking forward to about running Boston?
It's interesting. I wrote a post about it, and I probably contradict myself back and forth throughout that post. It's called Marathoning in the Art of, or in the Quest of the Holy Grail. And, you know, for most non-elite athletes, you know, Boston's kind of it, right? Like, mm-hmm. most of us aren't going to qualify for Olympic trials. And, you know, New York, qualifying for New York already puts you, like, probably in the 85th percentile of runners, which means the majority of us probably can make it there, or right. won't. So Boston's kind of it. Yes, I signed up for it. I got my acceptance Sunday night, which was, you know, it was a big deal for me. You know, I'm not a super elite, like, 230 marathoner, but, you know, it's decent enough to make, you know, Boston and mm-hmm. get in the early acceptance. I booked a hotel because I had points. I wanted to keep it cheap. You know, the race is like $200. I don't mind, like we were saying earlier, this is an experience, right. you know, when I'm 95 years old and, you know, I can't run anymore, or I look back on my life knowing I did probably the most historic race in the world that a lot of people consider to be. It's kind of cool, right? And that's the whole Seek experience. So, you know, for me, I'm just excited to be part of it. I do understand I'm lucky enough to have been, you know, that Mother Nature gave me enough ability to be able to qualify for it. You know, I know a lot of people spend a lot of time trying to make it and they just ultimately don't. Mm-hmm. That's unfortunate, but it doesn't make you any less of a runner if you do not. That's kind of the point I try to bring home in that article. But yeah, I'm looking forward to all the fanfare. You know, it's a little different than the runs I've run, and like the marathons I've done tend to have like 1,000 or 2,000 people in mm-hmm. it, right? And you kind of finish all spread out,
right?
And not really in a big pack and not having thousands of people screaming at you. So I am looking forward to the whole experience, you know, kind of the weekend and just being part of a historic race that so many people write about and dream about. You know, I feel very honored and kind of humbled to take part in it.
That's awesome. I'm certainly going to be checking in on you after the fact to find out how it went, because I love living vicariously through the folks that have been there, and eventually, eventually I'm going to be there. I'm going to make it happen, but it's I got to get a little bit older and a little bit faster, and eventually we're gonna meet in the middle there. But has Boston been something that's been on your radar for a while, or was it something where, you know, you ran fast enough, you qualified, and said what the heck, or how did that play out for you?
Yeah, I mean, I've only actually, so like I kind of said earlier, I don't run a ton of races, so you know, I meet all these people on Twitter, and you look at their profile and they're like, 14-time marathon. I'm like, man, these people run a ton. So I ran the first marathon and I missed a cut by, you know, like 40 seconds or something. I was like, I'm pretty close, so it'd be kind of cool to qualify for it. But then I got into a triathlon habit and I just kind of put marathoning on kind of the side. And then the guy I train with, he only runs, and he's done like 15 marathons, and he went to Boston and he was kind of talking about like, you know what? I feel like I just need to do this. So I trained throughout the winter. I tend to be very run heavy in the winter cause I don't like to train inside. Mm-hmm. So I just cannot ride my bike trainer. So I just run out every day. And, you know, I made a push for it. You know, I didn't go as fast as I would have liked, but I qualified for it. And that was kind of the whole point. So it was always on my radar. I was on a list of things I wanted to do. Like if you are a marathoner, you'd be lying if you say you don't think about it. Mm-hmm. Even the people that make it very easily, it's very important for them to go. Like some of the elite runners, you see them always talk about the importance of it. And then the people that unfortunately have no chance, they still talk about how they wish they could. So there's just something about it. I don't know what it is. I hope I'll understand when I'm there, like why so many people are drawn to it. Other than, you know, it's a bit of a status, I guess, but it's kind of an experience, like a rite of passage. So, felt I needed to do it.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think I've said this before. I think for me that the real moment is going to be the qualification, and then to me that the whole, I mean, and this is, you know, where I am right now, and I'm not, you know, even in the ballpark yet of qualifying, but it's like the whole weekend is, that's just going to be the celebration. Like, I'm not going to care about how fast or slow I run. Like, I'm not, you know, stopping for pictures and whatever. Like, I'm just going to, you know, I'm not going to walk it, but I'm not going to be pushing the pace on when I'm there on going from Hopkinton to downtown. It's going to be just a relaxed pace. Have you thought about that for yourself at all? Are you going to run it hard? Are you going to see how it goes, or any idea on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I'm right at the 3-hour mark. I don't share my time that often, but you know, you can probably figure them out kind of easily. So I'd like to break it. That's kind of a goal, just to have that 2-handle would be kind of cool. I probably should have done it earlier, but I seem to always kind of have a little bit of setback. Although I do know the past couple of years has been very hot there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's hard to run in the heat. You know, when I did my first Ironman, I got up to like 80, or my only Ironman, I got up to like 86 degrees in the run part, right? And your body just falls apart, so no matter how hard you want to go. So I kind of go in there knowing it's a harder course, although I'm pretty good in the hills from all the relays right. I've done. But knowing that the weather's pretty variable, and right, and you train in 1 degree weather all winter, and then you might show up there and it's 75 or 80. Mm-hmm. I do know they have a later start for non-elites like myself.
Right.
Then I might be combating with that. So I'm just kind of going in there to enjoy it. You know, the slower my time is, the more of the race I get to enjoy. So, you know, if I don't do it too well, maybe I get an extra 5 or 10 minutes of enjoyment and suck with the experience.
There you go. As long as this is 5 or 10 minutes of enjoyment and not 5 or 10 minutes of misery because something went wrong. That's what you got to go for.
Although, I always say I'm going to take things easy. And then the moment that gun goes off, it's like I'm back in the pool again when I'm 18. And I'm just racing people. So, you know, I can say if it's bad, I'll hold back. But I know me, and I'll probably end up going for it. I mean, I'm going to train to try to get a best time.
Right.
It's one of those things, you know, you take what Mother Nature gives you on that day. And if it's going to be an ugly day, you know, it's not worth putting yourself in the hospital over.
Yeah.
You're still going to get the same finisher medal if you walk across it, whether or not you go 250 or 350. Mm-hmm. So it's really not, I'm not going to cry about it.
Right.
Bad.
And that's the blessing and the curse of any type of endurance sport where you're outside, where, you know, it can be perfect weather, and it could be, it's rarely ever perfect weather, but it could be, it always could be perfect weather. But it can also obviously very be extreme one way or the other, or wind or rain or the whole nine yards. So you just got to, you know, prepare for the best, hope for the best, or maybe prepare for the worst, hope for the best. And then you deal with the hand that you're dealt when it's go time.
It is. And it always makes for a great excuse. So if you have a bad day, you can always blame it
blame
on the
weather.
It's like, it was a 26 mile headwind. I would have done amazing except for that. Yeah. So
definitely. So, CA, as we're wrapping up tonight, I'd love to ask you the philosophical question, kind of the typical, well, not the typical question, but the typical closing theme. And it's, you know, similar to the introductory question, very much open-ended, very much you can answer it with one or two words. You can answer it with a few sentences. You can answer it with 10 more minutes of conversation, if that's what, if that's how the spirit moves you. But I would just be curious, you know, what does, and anyway, and we can, you know, we can keep this in the triathlon world or the running world, either way, but being an endurance athlete, What does that mean to you? What does that label mean? You know, when somebody says you're a triathlete, when someone says you're a marathoner, when somebody says you're a swimmer from back in the day, being an athlete, pushing yourself in the endurance realm, what do you want that to convey, or what do you want that to say about you? If you could write the definition, what would that be?
That's an interesting question. You know, unfortunately, when people say you're a triathlete, there's a kind of a negative stigma with triathletes, and pardon my French, but people seem to call us douchebags a lot. So I try to actually stay away from telling people I'm a triathlete too much.
Whoops, sorry.
Give me a little lip. The way I see like being an endurance athlete is just kind of understanding yourself and kind of you know, what kind of, you're very in tune with yourself, right? Like if you're going to go out there and ride a bike for 5 hours or run for 3 or 4 hours, you have a really good understanding of how your body works, right? And it really allows you to kind of focus on a lot of just the necessities of life, right? Like when you're out there on a 3 hour run, the only things on your mind, right, are keeping your body moving and then food and water. And you just become very like focused and simple. And I find that kind of carries over to other aspects of my life, you know, and just how I just approach everything else. You know, it gives me confidence to, you know, go into most situations knowing that I just have such a confident, like, sense of self and understanding of my body and just how I work. So, you know, what do I want people to think when I tell them that? I don't want them to think I'm kind of a douche for, you know, getting into triathlons and just like in the race, and those guys tend to, you know, some of them tend to be a little bit cocky. Unfortunately, even when you are a marathoner and stuff, and, you know, I'm sure people that sit around me at work kind of get sick of other people come talking to me. So like, I do want people to realize like, we're not cocky, even runners and triathletes, just cause we do this crazy stuff. We do it cause we enjoy it. And we're actually generally excited to hear about you when you do it. And you don't really need to discount yourself if you're slower when you're talking to somebody faster. That seems to be always what beginners tend to do. Just to understand we're not jerks. We're actually good people, and we just enjoy kind of living life. We just do weird things.
Well said. Well said. And I love the point about, you know, slower versus fast. Like, if I had to, you know, pull my hair out when I hear somebody say, "Oh, I only run 5Ks," right? I'm only a run walker. Like, no. Like, you do it. You do what you need to do. Have fun. Enjoy yourself. Nobody's any better or any worse. So I love that point as well.
Yeah, no, and it actually, first of all, the 5K is a freaking hard race.
yes, it is.
I do not like doing it. I just always end up in the pain caves because, you know, you just put yourself above your lactate threshold, mm-hmm. and then your legs are 1,000 pounds. I think Laura Fleischman wrote an article about that once in Runner's World about, like, she was sitting on a, she's like the American 5K or 10K record holder. And she was sitting next on a plane next to a guy, and he was obviously a marathoner. Like, "Oh, you know, what are you running?" She's like, 5K. He's like, "Oh, you'll get it there." Kind of implying like that was a start. Like, you don't realize you're like talking to like one of the best athletes to ever walk this planet. Mm-hmm. And quite often, like, just we had a conference the other day at work, and somebody was telling me about their running. He's like, "Oh, you know, but you know, I'm not at your level yet." Like, it doesn't really matter. Like, you're doing what such a small portion of the population mm-hmm. is doing. Like, it's just awesome you're doing it, and you really need to embrace it and not kind of benchmark yourself to other people, because, you know, I would be doing the same, right? If I talked to a faster runner too, like,
right.
I'm not, generally, there's only one person on earth that can truly say they're the best person out there, right?
Exactly.
That everybody else,
yep.
there's always somebody better than you. So, like, just keep yourself kind of humble with the process and just enjoy that you're doing it. I mean, just running a marathon or running a 5K, just kind of an awesome feat, and you need to celebrate it.
Yes. I couldn't agree more. And that's a great place to wrap things up for today. So, guys, again, cheapathlete.com is the website, at cheapathlete on Twitter, Instagram, the socials, connect, follow what he's doing. Got some really good articles. You mentioned a handful of them. We'll link up to a bunch of them in the show notes as well. So, again, show notes, disruns.com/470. So, thanks for joining us. I certainly appreciate the time. And this has been a long time coming. We've kind of dodged a hurricane and a few other things to make this happen. But glad we were able to finally connect. And certainly I'm looking forward to staying in touch, wishing you nothing but the best going forward. And again, we'll keep in touch and can't wait to see how things unfold for you in Boston and beyond. So thanks for the time and all the best, my friend.
Thanks a lot for having me. I'm glad you made it through the hurricane safe and sound. I'm sure we'll be in touch. You're doing great work out here. I'll continue to listen.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation between the Cheap Athlete and myself. And as always, I'd be curious to know what stood out to you from this episode. What was your big takeaway from our conversation today? For me, I think one of the things that he mentioned along the way, and definitely mentions in his website and on his blog as well, is that you shouldn't buy speed. Don't spend for speed, with the idea that, you know, don't blow all of a whole bunch of money on the fanciest equipment. Like, you don't very often need that fancy of equipment. Is it nice to have some nice things? And does that maybe make the experience better? Sure. I mean, like we talked about at the end, like, maybe, you know, if that's something that you want, if it's something that you'll bring joy from, that you'll get joy from, that will enhance the experience, then go for it. But if you think that you need to, you know, spend a whole bunch of money for some fancy something, fancy pair of shoes, or, you know, the fanciest this or the fanciest that, just to try to shave a few seconds, like, maybe train a little bit more, maybe hit the trails or hit the hills or do something, do some extra workouts, get a coach to help you, improve that way, which will probably lead to a bigger, you know, jump in performance if that's what you're going for. But I really also love the idea of, you know, spending for experiences. So again, if it's something that makes your experience running more enjoyable, whether it's a race, whether it's, you know, getting a pretty nice hydration system so you can go out on a long all day trail run and not have to worry about finding places for water very often. I mean, you know, whatever. But just think about it for a second before you spend your money and see if it's something that you really, really maybe need or really want, as opposed to just something that you think you should have. You know. So anyway, that was my takeaway. Definitely enjoyed this chat, and I hope you did as well. So I would love to know what your takeaways were. Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. Or better yet, head over to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/470. And leave a comment there. And that way other folks can see what you had to, what you thought, what your takeaway was. And for a little bit of fun, I'd love to know, since this, you know, with Cheap Athlete here, it was a good, maybe this is a good time to ask a good question, like, what is something that you've spent money on running-wise that, you know, whether it's a little bit of money or whether it was a pretty decent chunk that you just regret, that was not a good purchase for you. I would love to hear those things. So let me know, tweet, email, website, and I'll be sure to respond with some of the things that I've purchased in the past that didn't exactly live up to the hype, because we've all had a few of those things, I'm sure. So anyway, we'll go ahead and wrap this thing up. Thanks again to WeGrind for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget, WEGRYND.com. Use the code DIZRUNS to save 15%. And again, great product, quality product, something that is going to last. So it has some of that value that CA talked about today. So with that, let's go ahead and put a bow on this thing today. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode as always. And if you did, please feel free to share it with a friend. It means a lot. Share it on social media, whatever the case might be. It certainly helps. So thanks for listening. Take care of yourselves. Hope you have a great rest of your day. And we'll talk soon. Take care, guys.